Listening with love to the word, in conversation through hurting, healing and hope. Week 6, Promise of Hope. I notice that you've chosen a piece of scripture from the Old Testament, from Ezekiel. I'm curious as to why you've chosen that and the impact that that scripture has had on you.
I know, I sort of asked myself the same question in that it's from the Old Testament. I chose it because when I first heard about this, it's the passage that sprang to mind. It has always spoken to me during the Holy Week services. And I think what it has spoken to me about such a dark, dark place that I have been in at times. And yet the picture that I've chosen is in such contrast to the place that this scripture takes me to. The hope, though, the reason I've called it hope is because in it I hear of a God who cares what has happened. Preceding this passage, Ezekiel is speaking to the priests and to those who have care of the people of God. And they have neglected their duties. They have abandoned their duties. And here we have God saying, you've not cared for my people in the way that you should have done. So I'm now going to go. And the fact of searching out, I was abused as an adult by a priest. And for decades, I was in denial. And then when I finally came out of that place, I was confronted with the question, right now, what do you do with this? And I just knew somehow that I had to speak to the church about what had happened to me, because I'd never, ever heard adult abuse being spoken of other than to completely dismiss it, with the victim being described and thought of as the perpetrator. And through taking that decision to speak, which many, many people, those who've been abused, will understand how terrifying that can be. But having made that decision, I have found that in a sense it has been my redemption to try and do something. Yes, I am doing it for myself. I have found some healing, actually finally admitting, first of all, to myself what has happened, breaking that secret, breaking that bond of silence, that I have been helped. But the hope that this speaking up on behalf of others may help someone else is for me a part of healing. And I was abused twice, once as a very small child, and then when I was about 6 or 7, my mother was Irish, unmarried, part of a generation that was quite literally rejected, abandoned by their family, the mothers, the fathers somehow, don't know where they were, but they weren't around either for the woman or for the child generally. And shame was heaped on the mothers, and they're just outcasts of society. And somehow or other that shame, so I speak now from a personal point of view, that shame sort of seeps into your bloodstream without a word being said. I last saw my mother when I was 7, and she died not long afterwards, but she had no option at that stage but to put me in a children's home. And again, quite apart from any other aspect, that sense of just being ashamed and knowing I wasn't good enough. There was something wrong with me, but I didn't know. I actually thought it was the shame of being an orphan, because that's what I was told I was. And God as my father meant nothing, nothing whatsoever. And even now I struggle with it, despite choosing this scripture, which does speak to a deep, deep part of me. And therefore, I take comfort from that, knowing that that must mean that there is belief within me in God as a loving person. I just used to feel I belonged nowhere because, of course, my mother's family, how convenient, the convent door shut behind me, safely in a children's home. And so that was them off the hook. So I just got no sense of belonging to anyone. The sisters were doing their best, but they were victims. This is my perception. Of course, I may not be right. They were victims of a warped spirituality and their own upbringing. They didn't have any idea of the needs of a child or a teenager growing up. So constantly put down, berated, whatever. But there was kindness there as well. And as I'm speaking, my mind keeps going blank, which I think is sort of a symptom of what I've done with so much of my life. I have just blanked out. I knew I wasn't good. I knew I wasn't. And growing up, that was all just consolidated because, of course, in those days, you didn't talk about sex. You certainly weren't to think about it. It was, of course, the worst sin that could be committed by anyone. Hence, people like my mother could be in hell. And somebody said something the other day that triggered a memory, how I used to lie in bed at night and very irrationally, I would have completely different thoughts. And I remember one thing was that I'd never been allowed to go to her funeral. And I used to lie in bed and think, oh, my mummy, I used to think of her as mummy. She's alive. They've just said she's dead because it's easier for me that way. They think it's easier. And I used to be waiting for her to come and find me and collect me. And the scripture comes in there. God is going to find all those outcasts, those who've been lost by society, in society, right? He loves them. He's actually going to come. But of course, my mum couldn't collect me. Another thing that I used to lie in bed worrying about was my mother in hell? It was a terrifying, terrifying thought, because I knew that we didn't think of it in these terms, but to have sex outside marriage was just the worst thing you could do. And so that terror that my mother was in hell. I grew up, I left the children's home with no sense of belonging, of being loved, of confidence, awareness of my own rights to being. I thought God, by this time it had been spelt out to me that my mother was unmarried when she'd had me. And I was just, I'd been so convinced ever since that that meant I wasn't part of God's plan. He had never planned that I should be part of the human race. And that is just not a good place to be in, not a good place to be in at all. And I entered religious life and I was actually very happy there. But I knew that my head was an absolute mess. If anyone innocently asked me, for example, or have you got any brothers and sisters, I'd be ready to strangle them. The rage that I would experience. And there was a priest who used to come and give talks, and he was renowned in so many quarters, purported to be a psychologist and a counsellor. And I asked if I could speak to him. So this was as a young woman. What I didn't know then, but have learned many, many years since, he was a prolific abuser of teenagers and young men and women. And like myself, many of these young men and women were caught up in, I don't know what word to say, a web that you couldn't escape from for years. And so my abuse, when it started, that bit in the scripture about the days that God would come and rescue them from the places where they've been scattered on a day of clouds and thick darkness. I remember that when the abuse started very, very gently to start off with, the confusion. He was a priest. Things were starting to happen that I had been told absolutely must not happen. And so it progressed. I went eventually into a state of deep denial, kept going back to him. He cut me off. I had a very, very fragile support group, having spent all those years in a children's home. and then after a couple of years entering religious life. But he cut me off from any support I had. So I was quite literally alone. And I look back and realize how dependent I became on him. And the abuse just increased and became more serious. But all the time I was told, this is God's will. Sex is from God. This is part of, you know, and you're immature. How many times would he tell me how immature and this was the source of all my problems? We never discussed my family or what had brought me there in the first place. And I have beaten myself up in a way that nobody else could beat me up. Because always I would say, but I was an adult. I should have been able to stop it. Which incidentally, the very few people that I have spoken to, or in general conversations where nobody knows that I have been abused, always that has been the reaction. Even friends don't say it that bluntly, but if you were an adult, you should have been able to stop it. You knew what you were getting into. But as an adult, you can be very vulnerable to abuse depending on your background. And so for myself, it wasn't me, the adult, that was relating to this man. It was the child that had been abused. It was the child that had been neglected. The child that thought God never intended her to be. I remember one night going home on the underground, very strongly, very literally, wanting to throw myself under the train to just end it all. And it went on for years and years. And then suddenly it stopped. And I went into a place of, what have I done wrong? This will sound so rational to so many people. What have I done wrong? What have I done to displease him? Even the day he said to me, I don't remember what I'd said to him. And he said, I have done so much to help you. I could have gone to prison for what I did to try to help you. Even that day, it didn't break through my sense of denial. All I felt was so guilty that I had done this to this man. He'd been willing to go to prison to help me, and I wasn't showing gratitude. I now know that the abrupt stop was almost certainly because there was a court case being brought against him. I knew nothing at all about that at the time. And this passage here, with God saying, really, I do care. I know you've been in a dark, dark space. And again, people who have been abused will understand what I say next. So often I go back there, flashbacks and the rest of it, and it affects my life because he ordered the direction of my life, made me, for example, leave religious life. No discussion, leave. Made me change my career dramatically. And there's so much else I could say, but I will leave it at that. But this scripture, the reason I chose a bright picture of the sunlight is that it gives me hope that God does care. He knows when we are in these dark, dark, dangerous places with no one to help, not knowing how to ask for help. Afraid to ask for help. He knows what that's like. And it's not what he wants for us. And he's going to come and rescue us. And it says, I'll feed them with good pasture and they'll dwell securely and no one shall make them afraid. And having that fear taken away, having the pain taken away, knowing that he does want to help. Maybe I don't sound very hopeful, but these words give me hope. They give me comfort and hope of being rescued. I don't know if what I've said there makes any sense.
Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing that. You talk about breaking the secret and being able to get hope from that. And that is so important and such a powerful thing to do. Because survivors carry that secret for so long, eating away inside. And being able to break that and finding somewhere that hope of being able to talk about it and to release the pain and the anguish is such a place of hope. is such a place of privilege to be. And the last line you talked about in that reading, they shall dwell securely and none shall make them afraid, is the hope that all survivors hope for, to not be afraid. So once more, thank you. Thank you so much for such a powerful and moving talk.
Just want to add one thing, and that is the power that an abuser can have even when they have died. Because the struggle to speak when I got to that stage was against the background of somehow managing, as you've described, that break that secrecy. So the power over the victim can still last even when the person has died. Thank you for what you've said.
Thank you.